Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host Han. How are you, Han?
I am doing marvelous, Jim. How are
Excellent.
You this evening?
Not bad at all. Well, welcome to tonight's show, Straight Talk, episode number 15, and it's titled OSHA and HIPAA Compliance. One might ask, what in the world is a designer, a dental designer, and a dental architect talking about things like OSHA and HIPAA? And how would that even possibly relate to the design of a dental practice? Well, tonight we're going to have two things that are really exciting. One, we're going to have Han talk about a whole bunch of things that he's had experience with in regards to this matter. But also we're having a very special guest who will be connecting with us here in a few minutes, who is actually a specialist and an expert in dealing with these two areas. And we're going to get an opportunity to really pick her brain and get a thorough, in-depth understanding. But the idea of OSHA, you may or may not have heard that term before. Obviously, it's just like so many other three or four or five-letter terminologies. OSHA stands for Occupational Safety and Health Administration. A lot of us in the construction world are familiar with OSHA. We understand about that because it deals with, in the construction world, the safety of the construction worker, the areas and aspects of the actual constructing of things, and really it is there for the protection and safety of everyone that's on a particular job site. But it's not really only limited to the construction world. It doesn't go away after the construction is done on your project. In actuality, it's there forever because it is a federal set of laws and regulations, and they have control over a lot of things that are done and have areas and expertise and rules and regs that have to be followed. So we're going to learn a lot about that. HIPAA, those in the healthcare field understand what that's all about, and it has to do with Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, and deals with everything from privacy and all those kind of aspects, very involved, in-depth set of rules and regulations that Jill's going to be able to talk about at much further length. But with that, I'd like Han to share with us how in the world does OSHA and the rules and regs have a practical, direct relationship to how a dental office is designed?
Well, you know, Jim, I think it's an area that's really barely addressed in dentist office relating to the design of the office. Okay. I think OSHA, when you talk OSHA in a dentist office, it's usually had to do with infection control. Mainly, you know, Jill can elaborate on that when she come on board. When I think of OSHA, I think of buildings and safety, you know, and things like that, more the occupant than the building itself. It came to my attention, particularly in a dentist's office. You know, when you think of a dentist's office, how dangerous can it be for the, you know, for the staff and for the, you know, for the patients. But you know, aside from infection control, all right? But the physical environment, how hazardous can it be? It's not a factory where you have forklifts running around. You don't have vehicular traffic. You don't have things that's being on pallets and stuff like that, like you see, you know, in big box stores and so on. But a design feature that I saw that I thought that's interesting, the way it was designed, I think the intent was to save square footage associated with circulation, which is, I think, is a good idea. However, routing the traffic to a work area unnecessarily is a concern for me, or at least I think it's an area that needs to be addressed. For instance, when we think of staff area, we typically want it to be quiet and the staff to get to it easily and things like that. When you think of sterilization, you think that's where you go, you take all the soil instruments, you get it clean and you wrap it and get it reused. You don't want, you know, you don't want that area to be contaminated, or you don't want to have unnecessary traffic that's not working in that area to go through there. It's, you know, I relate to like your kitchen at home. When you're cooking your dinner, you got hot stuff on the stove, you got, you know, you're cutting up and prepping food, you got sharp instrument, you have hot food. You don't want people that's not working in the kitchen to tromp through there just because they can. All right? In this particular feature, the traffic, the staff traffic, go through the sterilization to the lab to the break room. And that is the route that they travel. Now, it have, because in dentist's office, there's a lot of things that I see that are not red flag for inspectors and so on, and even it is considered a violation in the normal commercial offices, it doesn't seem to really be an issue for inspector. However, that does not relinquish you from, you know, from the liability issue if you have staff and or, you know, or traffic that go through area that they shouldn't go through, like sterilization. And so I reach out to Jill, and that's our first conversation, because she's involved in OSHA related compliant issues and training, and just kind of pick her brain and see if my thinking was in line with with her and what we would consider industry standard, is that you don't want to make things more hazardous when you have other options. So that was my introduction to Jill. OSHA is, again, you cannot, in my opinion, you cannot build the building or design the building safe enough so that that 100% of the time nobody can get hurt. You just can't. But everything that you can do from sight line, from flooring material where, slippage, it can be minimized, from door swing, those things that you can in the design process to minimize hazard condition for the occupant in the building, not just the staff, but the entire occupant load into the building, then it's a good thing if you can, if you can look at the design feature that would minimize a hazard condition, collisions, slippage, and things like that. So OSHA is a little bit more than simply deal with infection control for the dental offices, and that's a topic have not been really discussed relating to how we can design the building to minimize issue that's associated with OSHA, HIPAA as well. Okay.
Exactly. And we're very familiar, of course. Go back and listen to one of our podcasts to deal with the code and those kind of issues. That there are building codes, and building codes state the minimum requirements on how things are put together. Dealing with life safety issues is one of the areas. Others having to do with structural integrity, water infiltration, all those kind of things that all ties back to the aspect of life safety for the occupants of a commercial building. But this is on top of what you would find normally within the building code regulations. Building codes will deal with things like, you know, stairs, access, accessibility, making sure there's no, you know, that there's proper handrails and guardrails and those kind of things. But this actually, like I say, adds on to the safety of the staff as well as the occupant. Han, you hit one of a very important point, and it has to do with potential floor materials. Floor materials and the aspect of slip and falls. That has, there's OSHA requirements that deal with the kind of materials or the areas that should be properly treated to be able to minimize that. Obviously, at any time, someone can fall. But if you accidentally and by not knowing to look forward at this, put in the wrong kind of material in a certain area, and let's say you're in a snowy climate and they walk into the building and there's not the proper treatment to be able to take the snow off their feet and shoes, you've got a potential OSHA violation along with a pretty big liability, because you've got an issue, of course, where potentially someone can slip and fall and injure themselves. And that could be staff or that could be a patient. So it does have a direct relationship to the actual design, the actual layout, and also the actual finishes that are utilized in the space, including some of the things that you may not even think of. With that, Han, why don't you go ahead and give us Jill's background and information, because she's going to be joining us here very shortly.
Yep, okay. I hope Jill forgive me for if I mispronounce her name. It's Jill O'Proctor. Jill is has 20 years, she's a 20-year plus veteran of the clinical dental hygiene arena. She specializes in patient motivation and chairside verbal skills. And she's considered one of the top dental OSHA and HIPAA compliant experts. In the last few years in her career, she has been a compliant researcher, product developer at OSHA GHS and HIPAA training specialist. She is an internationally published writer and educator for several top industry manufacturers, including ProDentec, Capital One, Waterpik Technologies, 3M ESPE, and P&G. She's also the founder of DentalEnhancement.com. Let me see, nationwide web-based educational company specialized in OSHA and HIPAA training, Make Easy. In a minute here, she will be logging in, and we can give her the official welcome and when she come on board. Okay, and then she has a wide range of experience and resume and stuff like that, but I'll let her just kind of go over that quickly. That way I don't mess it up for her. Okay?
Excellent. And obviously to our listeners that if you have a question, would like to ask directly of either myself or Han or Jill when she comes on, please feel free. Give us a call on the guest call-in line, 657-383-1442. As Han has always said, you don't have to use your real name, and there really isn't a bad question. Obviously, someone hopefully would be able to learn from any question there might be out there. One of the other things that I found very interesting, Han, when I was setting up the information for today's topic, is that, you know, we are now in so many different states and countries that it is it's surprising to me. We've gotten folks from Germany. We've gotten listeners from New Zealand. Obviously, you know, the U.S. and Canada. So that's pretty exciting. But as far away as India, Kenya, for example, we got a listener or two from Kenya that has logged in. So it's just exciting to know that the information that we're putting out here on the airways is being listened to by so many people around the world, and hopefully it's been and is useful, and it helps them to move forward with maybe a question or answer that they've been looking for. And I know, Han, you've worked on design projects all over the world as well, in numerous locations, helping out folks. And lately, we have been getting quite a lot of feedback and requests for consultations from dentists around the country that are looking to do some. So it seems to me that we're really beginning to see a, I don't want to call it a tidal wave, but definitely a uptick in the activity out there of folks looking to do things. Have you kind of noticed that?
Yeah, actually, I did some research, and one of our consultation requests was from Dubai. And I have seen projects done in Dubai, and I thought, in the United States, when the client want to spend a little extra money and things like that, you thought, well, it's they're building a Taj Mahal. Okay, you know, they may spend a little extra on a nice carpet, or they paint do a treatment on the wall, and and people would say, hey, you're building a Taj Mahal. Well, I've seen projects in Dubai. Taj Mahal in the United States certainly doesn't look anything like Taj Mahal in Dubai. They don't hold back on anything. When they say they're going to make it look nice, money is an issue.
There we go.
I believe
Jill has called in. Let me connect her on.
Very good.
Hello, this is Jim and Han. Jill, is that you?
Hey, good evening. Yes, it's me. How are you, gentlemen, tonight?
Very good.
We're doing great, Jill. I took a little time. I read the intro for you. I hope I didn't mess up your name too bad. Right?
It's okay. Everyone knows me like Cher, first name. Jill. It's cool. Great. Super good. Yeah.
No, I think I've seen doctors that has unusual last name, and they just go by the first initial. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like my name, it will be Han T, because they couldn't pronounce my last name. All right.
Well, same thing, right?
Yeah. Hey, Jill, you have a pretty nice resume and a good history. I already introduced you to the listener. Would you take a few minutes and just kind of give the listener, the audience, a little bit of your background and what do you do?
Sure, absolutely. Well, I'm so pleased to be here and joining you this evening. And I am a dental hygienist originally by training. I think my love for compliance started accidentally. I was practicing hygiene in South Florida at the beginning of the 90s. And I was in charge of a study group for OSHA, 30 docs. would come to me for compliance help. At that time, there was a dentist in South Florida, and it was in the media, and he was presumably opening his bloodstream during dental injections, and consequently 9 of his patients get sick with the same strain of AIDS virus he had. So, you know, I'm in the middle of this ground zero, and it's really fragile time to practice dentistry in South Florida, super delicate time across the country to practice dentistry. So at that time, I was able to focus with the Centers for Disease Control and some of my mentors who teach infection control, John Molinari, who's a really well-known infection control guru these days. I was just placed there. So my love for infection control, bloodborne pathogens, all of that surfaced during that time. And I think that's when my OSHA compliance love really blossomed, how to do this stuff easily. So I grew from that to go in to be a speaker for some national companies, traveled the country, traveled the world, spoke in Switzerland. And I was so fortunate as a hygienist to be able to be a national speaker for companies like Procter & Gamble, 3MSC. Within the last 10 years, I started my own web education company, and we teach dental offices how to implement OSHA and HIPAA compliance easily. And in fact, our brand is OSHA Made Easy and HIPAA Made Easy, and Dental Enhancements is our company. So my team and I we're super passionate about figuring all this stuff out, knowing the current laws, keeping offices updated year upon year upon year, and making it just real easy. You know, connect the dots, paint by number. Let's face it, doctors have dentistry to do, and they want to practice the art of dentistry. So we practice the art of compliance. And that's pretty much a little bit about me. I'm based in South Florida, so I always have a beautiful day to go to the office. And I'm originally from Chicago, educated at Loyola University in Chicago. So I've had a beautiful hygiene career, and I'm really excited tonight to talk to you about OSHA and HIPAA compliance and making it easy for a lot of your listeners to tackle and implement and get on a good pace with it.
Excellent. Before you came on, Jill, we had an opportunity to discuss a little bit about, you know, Han and I are architects and designers, okay? So we know OSHA from the construction world. You know, you've got workers out there on the job, OSHA is the agency that looks out for their protection. Now, obviously, that's a different area once the construction is done. So can you explain a little to our listeners the difference between OSHA and HIPAA in it relates to after construction has completed and they've moved into their building?
Absolutely. You know, OSHA, it's always good to keep in mind that OSHA is for the safety of the employee. You know, originally it was established for the industrial sector, you know, steel-toed shoes, hard hats, lifting belts, and nowadays, it's in every sector for safety. And in the dental office, it truly is for infection control and, you know, needle stick injuries that encompasses bloodborne pathogens. It crosses over into public health, even environmental safety. We'll talk about that a bit today, how to properly contain waste. HIPAA is privacy. So HIPAA emerged in the late 90s, and originally, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 96, it was so that insurance policies, if you were moving from state to state, you could take your insurance policy with you and you wouldn't have price gouging. You know, then it really morphed itself into protecting anyone's past, present, or future identifiable health information. So there's the difference, right? OSHA is safety. Safety first of the employee. It goes a little bit into public health and environmental safety, but HIPAA is privacy, protecting the patient information, making it confidential and secure. So when you're doing a build out, what is important is that infection control, the sterilization area is set up properly. Even the waste portals are properly built out. I love when they're drop down portals within the actual treatment rooms, or certainly at sterilization. So you separate these things out properly. I think the dentists, they have to be master waste organizers. So you have to have everything in the correct place. And for HIPAA, oh my goodness, you know, you can have a beautiful patient experience. The patient is in the back. They had a great hygiene visit or, you know, a smile makeover. If they get to the front desk area and they're checking out and the reception team is not very careful to process a credit card privately or to speak very softly or privately about their periodontal disease, their denture, their implant, people get embarrassed. We know everyone, we all have our phones in our hands, you know, every waking moment. And these savvy patients now, they can go out, press a couple of buttons on their phone, report a dentist to the Office of Civil Rights, and that's when trouble ensues, where they're involved in a lengthy HIPAA audit, typically lasting about 18 months. Fines for HIPAA start at $10,000 these days, go up to $1.5 million. So security is no joke. Right, for a new build-out, super important, infection control stations, sterilization areas, waste portals, and then for HIPAA, I really love when the check-in and check-out, there are privacy for both visual and auditory, you know, so that things can be muffled, kept private, and insulated.
You know, Jill, particularly in both those areas, check in and check out. You know, it's an area that's tough to tackle, to fully, fully protect the privacy of the patient's information, whether it's conversation and or documents. I know that, there's a. I feel that there's a major pushback simply because there's not enough. There seems like there's never enough room or available floor space to do, to execute a design where those things are addressed appropriately, because money is always a big issue when it comes to design and construction of, of a dental office or any office for that matter. Okay. From time to time, we have clients and or have discussion within the clientele base where some have very flippant attitude about codes and standards and stuff like that. Why is it so cumbersome, so expensive, and so on? And can we just simply get through the permitting process or the certificate occupancy process, and then and go back and do what we want to do. Do you run into that kind of attitude when dealing with OSHA and or HIPAA? Importantly, why is it important that the dentist office or dental office be in compliance with both those topics?
It's really part of my day-to-day coaching. And part of coaching is helping the dentist, the practice owner, and the team to understand, take the 10-floor-up view. I'm looking at how to implement best practices to keep them safe. You know, if they're hiring a compliance coach, they obviously want to do the best thing. Be proactive, avoid and avert any kind of problems. Fines, being shut down, losing license, embarrassment, all that kind of thing. So for HIPAA, there are some easy safeguards, because let's face it, when I'm dealing with an office, they're either already built out, maybe they're doing a rebuild or remodeling, things like that. But for the most part, if the office is what the office is, here are some quick fixes. So, even when we go to stores to go shopping, TJ Maxx, Marshalls, Target, we have to stand behind a line. You can't even go up to the register when you're doing checkout shopping. So sometimes an office will design with a bench, a line, a seated area, and a sign. A sign that can simply say, please have a seat in the reception area or at this benched area behind this line while our patients have private checkout. We like to ensure each patient's HIPAA privacy. The same verbiage can be adopted by team members So as they walk a patient up front, they're getting used to this change. Oh, I'll have to sit over here at this bench, or I'll have to take a seat in the reception room without a drastic redesign. So a signage, super important, because then that can really influence patients to change behavior, comply, and then it does prove during an audit that they've taken that extra step and they're trying to be definitely do their due diligence. With OSHA, the issues come up with containment of waste. Now dentists have to contain not only soft biomedical waste and sharps at the point of use. You can't walk around with that stuff because that can cause infection or ill injury if rehandled. Now, across the nation, we have to also be aware of environmental disposal, pharmaceutical waste. In most states, you only need one pharmaceutical waste container, and this becomes big when it comes to partially full anesthetic carpules. Those can't go back into normal trash. They can't go into sharps containers. Those hurt the environment. You know, I'm not sure if you're aware, pharmaceutical waste isn't biodegradable. So it goes into our sewer systems, into our landfill. And, you know, animals eat that pharmaceutical waste, kills the animals. Worse yet, we eat the animals. We're absorbing the toxic waste. So there are these new pharmaceutical waste containers. A lot of doctors aren't even aware they need them, let alone how to get them, let alone how to set them up. And then big push for mercury containment and amalgam recycling containers. So I, in my day-to-day practice, I can help them to first understand the concepts and get on board with containers, signage, screened out, facing computers different ways, or screened out a blackened screens, you know. So those are simple fixes. But I really think if they're doing a build-out, if they can do some little tweaks just some little things to help that office to be as HIPAA-compliant as possible, that is really key. Super important investment to avoid problems down the line. And, you know, a lot of times receptionists don't even mean to step into that landmine, but they may even, print the wrong invoice, hand it to the wrong patient. So taking steps, I always say, have a HIPAA fire drill. Practice some things that might go wrong, and always do your redesign or your build-out so that it can be as enhanced towards OSHA and HIPAA compliance as possible.
So this could be as simple as, let's say that you've already got an existing practice and there's only, let's say it's really bad, there's only one location where a patient can check out. So when the technician brings the patient to the front, to the checkout desk, if they see that the desk is currently being used by a patient, they'll hold them off some distance, and that will be a predetermined procedure that they're just going to stand with them until that patient clears that checkout, and then they can proceed and move forward. It could be as simple as that. Is that correct?
It could be. It yes. could be as simple as some offices have a holding area where, oh, we go into the office manager's office if we know there's going to be financial arrangements. Most often, it's let's make the protocol that they go into the reception room, and then that receptionist can kind of see or be somehow cued, like you have another patient in queue for checkout, for private checkout. That's probably the easiest and most common. And then that signage. Boy, that signage is so helpful when an auditor comes in because it proves due diligence that the team is announcing, even non-verbally, we want to ensure privacy during checkout. Please make sure you allow enough space, have a seat in the reception area, and then we'll make sure you have privacy and we uphold HIPAA laws. So it's as simple as that, yeah. And it doesn't have to be crazy or expensive. It just has to be smart and sensible.
Makes sense.
So what is the general distance from for the privacy sake from the checkout desk to the holding area?
You know, hon, they don't. The HIPAA laws are written in such an obtuse manner. They're so gray, so they don't really say. And a lot of HIPAA audits are going on now since 2017. These offices are self-funded. you know, and it raises a lot of revenue. So I would say a proper distance so that sound is muffled, things are inaudible. Putting up, it depends on the look of the office. Aesthetic is always something that a dentist can will focus on. So muffling sound boards, they have those within cubicles for offices for years, but some people like glass, some people like smoke glass, frosted glass, or those muffling sound boards, but at least making sure you have 10 feet. If that's a problem, there's always a reception area, which can, as far away from the checkout, at least it proves due diligence. Yeah?
Understandable.
Good point. Well, good point.
You've talked to, Jill, you've talked about OSHA dealing with workplace safety, and you know, it takes into account things like fire safety, electrical safety. I mean, there's a whole bunch of, you call them learning points that OSHA falls under. And can you talk a little bit about those, as well as the obviously when you deal with infection control, what have you observed as OSHA violations in some of the projects that you've been integrated and involved with?
So, you know, each year OSHA has a different amount of learning points. The key for a dentist is to make sure that they are having their team trained and then signed off with proof of training on all of these learning points. Currently, it's 45 different learning points. And this would include fire safety, electrical safety, emergency exit routes, proper signage, infection control, bloodborne pathogens, dental water, like from their chair, water quality now. The standard is it has to be up to a drinking water quality. So making sure that they are having, if they have a dental laser, that they have that set up properly with signage, that a laser could be in use. Proper handling of, as I said, the biomedical waste, the sharps, mercury, pharmaceutical waste. This year, the Centers for Disease Control was studying dentistry over a 10-year period. And they were up in arms, and they said to OSHA division, they said, you know, we've really got to get infection control up to a better standard within the dental office, because we've been turning our heads away about certain things. And this is the key. What I see presently for OSHA. Now, in this past year, the average OSHA visit would, if there were fines given, they were on average $13,000. And willfully not rectifying those didn't double the fine. It went up tenfold. So $130,000, they're getting as bad as HIPAA fines. You know, I see the main thing for OSHA, the sterilization centers are old, they're antiquated. They don't even properly keep the dirty side from the clean side. And there is a four-step sterilization process now to accomplish a hospital-grade level of sterilization standard. This becomes shocking or difficult for someone, you know, you're in a routine for 10, 20 years, you start saying, what? We have to change what? Like, you know, you can't. It's like reinventing the wheel, so to speak. So very new things near their autoclaves. And other things I find that are simple, but again, an office can be functioning in a certain way for a very long time. Bathrooms not being built out to code, hallways not being passable, cluttered rooms, huge, big, big situations. So those are some of the things I see from day to day. We have a checklist. They learn it. If someone goes through training, we do webinar training, and they have all of our instructors, our coaches, our former dental professionals. How convenient, because they understand their world. And then after we do a training, we do a customized checklist so we can provide all the correct answers. And that way, again, it's paint by number, connect the dots. What do I need? I learned that in the training. But these things like signage, fire safety, how to set up proper disposal of all of their waste, those are things that are on a checklist and can be easily corrected. It's so important to just not overlook them, right? Because you don't know what you don't know until that inspector comes calling and then he says, you needed to know this, right? So it's better to always be proactive.
You know, it's it appears that, you know, in the design of buildings, you know, the our mantra is life, safety, health, and it appears that there is no fine line between, you know, OSHA and building codes, because they kind of overlap each other, and which is a good thing. Okay, so you know, you got there a lot of the points, you know, in terms of the building itself. Very good point, because I even building that are relatively new, after, you know, a couple of years in use, old habits just kind of creep its way back, and you look and it's like, I think just people have been trained about the potential, you know, compliant issues and stuff like that, like who's going to catch us, you know, and that's the worst thing that you can hear. So, hey, Jill, in terms of, you know, when does the doctor, if they're looking at building a new office for the first time or for the second time for that matter, would engage your services to go over the OSHA and HIPAA issue and be compliant? Would it be best that they do that early on, or when do they bring you on board?
Yeah, you know, for a new construction or even someone purchasing a transitional practice, right? Usually they do something to upgrade, but let's say it's a new build out. Those practitioners get on lists. I mean, they're getting on the city code inspectors lists. This is the most prominent time that a new practice owner will experience an OSHA visit for sure within that first year. Mostly within the first 6 months. That's when the radiation division is coming to calibrate machines, making sure licenses have been purchased and in place. And once they're on those building inspector lists for checking to see that everything's in code, then OSHA inspectors use that. And so that is the most prominent time. And I would say if there's a build out, if we have clients calling, we love for them to get ready, OSHA ready and HIPAA ready about 6 to 8 weeks before they open. You know, they can do kind of a soft open. Things are getting still installed. Their X-ray, all of their software and the X-ray units and things like that. But having that all in place before they actually open is so key. That way everyone knows where the OSHA manual is, where certain forms, where certain employee paperwork. And they don't have to be nervous at all. Again, they could call. My team's always readily available to jump in if they have had training with us. Then we will speak on their behalf during an OSHA or HIPAA inspection. Now they have to connect the dots and do some of that homework on their checklist. But that makes things a lot less nerve-wracking, gives the doctor a lot more peace of mind to implement prior to the open. Very smart.
Very good.
Well, I know for a fact, Jill, to add a little to that, that, you know, for example, in the final walkthrough of a project, whether it's a new build or a renovation or a renovation, you know, the fire marshal is going to be alerted because he's tied into the building permit process. And that fire marshal will come through and do things like check for exit signage and make sure that everything is code compliant. He or she will also check for the fire extinguishers and make sure that they're properly placed and certified. And then you're on their list, and they will come back. I mean, they do that for every building. I know here where we're at in Maumee, Ohio, we get a visit for them every 6 months. That's just the way it is. They come in and check everything, and, you know, we're just an architectural office. So that's their requirement and their rules, and they're going to come in and make sure that all those exit signs, the exit lighting, battery backups are in place along with the fire extinguishers, and to make sure that they're certified. As you say, fire extinguishers have to be certified every year. So,
absolutely. And there's a new federal law this year. There's a new federal law that the office needs to check every month. They need to make sure they're professional grade extinguisher, not something from Home Depot, right? That is checked every month, initialed and dated. So there's an easy way to accomplish that, but signage, fire extinguishers, the illuminated exit signs, and then that backup, so important. One of the first things OSHA inspectors look for, and that ties in with your building and architecture and fire department. So it's such a good point.
Yeah, I know here those crazy batteries that go into the exit signage are not something you can buy just anywhere. So once I found them, you'll find them on Amazon or wherever you're going to find them, you know, buy a half a dozen of the things and put them in the closet. They don't go away, and they're there and readily available, because every time it just never fails. Every time that fire marshal comes in here and uses his little wand to test that thing, the dang battery's dead. So it's like, okay, we're not in compliance, but we will be in about 5 seconds because
perfect.
That's how long
it
takes.
I love it.
Yeah, you have the ability to be able to plug in a new battery that quickly. But you're right.
What did we do before Amazon, right?
Oh, I tell you, I don't know. I don't remember. I don't remember world before Amazon.
The old
days. And I'm in my late 50s. So if you've already got a practice, how often are you actually required to recertify? And there's like three areas, right? The federal, international, and then...
There are. Yeah. So in Michigan and Texas, they have some bolder compliance submodules, even with Washington State, California. So we always make sure that the state protocols are in order too. But let's just talk generally across this nation. There are three areas of compliance. Every single year, every single employee needs to get certified that they've been trained in an annual OSHA safety course. It used to be you could send one person, they could come back and parrot it back and kind of mimic what they learned, but there's 45 learning points. So having total immersion as a team and making sure everyone is certified, that's what inspectors will look for sure. Second thing, once in a lifetime, at every dental office, each employee has to go through an international OSHA course, and that is called Global Harmonization System. That's really a fancy name for International Chemical Safety. So whether you're part of the reception team or the clinical team, you do have to go through the GHS Global Harmonization System certification. Those are the two OSHA requirements. And then federal HIPAA requires that you are trained before you start working with patient information into these federal HIPAA omnibus rules. And the omnibus rules went into effect. They updated the prior HIPAA requirement. These new laws went into effect in 2013. Now, federal HIPAA, they say that you need to have proof of training that all team members have gone through HIPAA compliance updates at least annually or when needed. And those laws, the privacy and security laws, are written in a very obtuse, kind of a gray area, so we can grow into these laws. Technology keeps growing. We have to keep accommodating. Now, HIPAA covers not only computers and internet to be safe and secure, copy machines, fax machines, shredding, paper, conversation, texting. So it's super far-reaching. So at least once a year for HIPAA. And those are the three. In Michigan, they have a much more robust OSHA program, and every 2 years in Texas, they have a biannual requirement that the team is certified in something called Texas HIPAA HB 300. They have stricter laws for getting the patient's request for patient information and x-rays, their records, delivered much more timely than the rest of the country, and all employees have to be super aware that if they use any electronic devices and transmit or utilize patient information, they have to be certified in what they need to do and not do in Texas. So three for sure, right? Federal, annual OSHA training, international, global harmonization system, and the federal HIPAA omnibus rules. Those should be, at least directly looked at, and whether it's a new practice or an existing practice owner, those are the things they need to have in place.
Wow. Hey, Joe, is there such thing as a grandfather in associated with OSHA or HIPAA?
No. Little things. Like, if it's a historical building and let's say the building is, they can't really hang exit signs, then an office may be grandfathered in because they can't really wire in all of the exit signs in a certain way. It is rare. So for training, no. And then they don't really get much leeway. Now, let's say an office has an issue and they purchased a program and they're going to get certified. Let's say a new practice owner, oh my goodness, I'm opening and I'm worried. As long as they have something in the works, that inspector would look at things more kindly if it's a new build out or a practice owner. But isn't anything as grandfathered in. All of us that are practicing and have a business within the USA, the practice owners do have to provide that for the employees regularly.
Good to know. Yeah, of course, there's always dentists and a client out there that say, hey, I can do this myself. I want to save a few hundred dollars. Okay. Can a dentist not set up their own protocol to meet, to be OSHA and HIPAA compliant?
They can. But they have to keep in mind several things if they're going to do it themselves. They want to make sure that they have those. You're keeping up to date and building a comprehensive program. So building it comprehensively. And what's important is this year, 45 learning points. Maybe next year it's more. So having resources to know what is coming in vogue during the year and keeping up to date. Next is paperwork. So when an inspector comes in the office, they expect that everyone's trained. They're going to naturally ask for all the proof of training. Certificates for each employee, all vaccination documents. It's not just hepatitis. This year, they want documentation, whether someone's had a flu shot, measles, mumps, rubella, tetanus shot, meningitis shot. Also, your HIPAA manual. It has to be customized. So many pages, at least 80 pages on infection control, bloodborne pathogens, global harmonization systems. So differentials for what they have implemented within their practice according to the mandates that are current. And finally, facility protocols. The inspector comes in. First thing he's going to ask for within 5 minutes of being at the office, all employee paperwork, current OSHA manual, all of the safety data sheets. You should have those at your fingertips. You have about 5 minutes to produce about 1,000 documents that he wants. And then after that, an OSHA inspector will look for about 200 protocols to be set up properly within the office. For HIPAA, it's the same thing. Manual, employee paperwork, proof of training, and then at least 30, 35 protocols and several real hefty HIPAA reports. So having paperwork at their fingertips and protocols properly implemented, it does become overwhelming for the general practitioner. It's a specialty in and of itself. I think I prove that every single day that I get up and go to work. It's a very cumbersome if you're trying to practice dentistry, right? You're trying to keep up on your own craft, and then you have this hanging over your head, and then things constantly change and morph. So most practitioners that want to be serious and proactive and make sure they can sleep at night and have peace of mind will find a reliable resource and then someone they can trust. And then they know, okay, they've got my back on this. I can focus on dentistry. They'll remind me when I have to do the renewals. And then, to align yourself with a reliable resource and then be compliant really for your lifetime is what you want. You want to be able to set up your annual training at a certain month and always know, hey, that's our training month, and that they're going to call and we're going to sit down and do the training, be it in person or webinar. That's the way to go. I just think that to do it yourself, you can miss things that the OSHA or HIPAA inspector will not. And that results in missed time at work, stress, fines, you know, that's just not worth it.
So let's
go ahead, Jim.
Let's say the dentist has said, holy crap, this is way above my intensity grade. I don't want to deal with this kind of stuff. How in the world does he or she pick the right kind of consultant like yourself? And what should they be looking for?
You know, I have, I call it the nine commandments of compliance. And it does deal with knowing the federal annual OSHA is every year, that international global harmonization system, and then the federal HIPAA omnibus rules. I think that if you know what the inspector is going to look for employee training, and then the required paperwork and the facility protocols, I'll give my graph away for free. I want doctors to shop. And they can utilize these nine commandments and go, okay, I have to have training and paperwork and facility protocols in all three of those areas. So when you multiply those three requirements by training and paperwork and facility protocols, you have nine areas to be compliant in. But the other thing that's so important, you know, many of these compliance companies, they'll send you a manual, they'll send you templates to complete a report or create your own forms. And they're never around when you have questions, when you need something explained or a law explained. But most of all, when an OSHA inspector comes calling or a HIPAA inspector, who can you turn to? So I think it's very important to align with the company that's going to be available, be your resource, and be accountable. If they're going to give you checklists and explain the laws, they should really help you to implement them. And then, you know, our trainers, I think we're in a unique situation here at Dental Enhancements. I only hire former dental employees, dental hygienists, dental assistants, dental office managers. They need to know the environment. We only serve other dental professionals. And our training team is available 24/7. That provides a lot of peace of mind. When we answer the phone 7 a.m. on a weekday morning or 6 p.m., 7 p.m. at night. Really, I think offices are impressed on Saturday afternoon or Sunday morning when we're answering the phone. But let's face it, the doctor should have his hand on a tooth, on a handpiece, 9 to 5, right? So we're happy to field calls. Sometimes that's when the office manager or the team can implement the protocols and look at our checklist early in the morning, sometimes a Saturday afternoon. So those are things that are very important. Align with a coach that you can talk to, that you feel you have a beautiful relationship with, and that you can get a hold of when you need them. That is key. Also, of course, implementing the three required areas of compliance, and then the training, the paperwork, and the facility protocols. Those are absolute necessities. And I think having that relationship and the ability to call someone and talk things over, especially if you're risking an audit, it makes you just feel so grounded and that you have a lot of peace of mind in your choice.
Joe, I think we have just a little bit time left, but in terms of you know, of things that you can recommend to the doctors that are contemplating these, you know, starting their own practice, what are some of the things you can share with them to make their life a little easier?
Well, I think that if you're going to begin to work with, setting up your practice, you can easily lose sight. You're looking at the build out and how beautiful it is and how functional it is and the equipment. But, you know, OSHA and HIPAA inspectors, they're either going to weave their way into your life in the beginning when you start practicing. The other thing to remember is during your practice, being proactive to set up these protocols is so important. The most common way that you elicit an inspection is a disgruntled employee or a disgruntled patient. So making sure you've crossed every T, dotted every I, and that every year you're going to have another training and become recertified and up to date, that brings a lot of peace of mind. And getting that aligned with, if you have a coaching service, we always like pre-schedule before you hang up or you stop your training for this year during our webinar. In our facility report, we reschedule for next year. So that is important, getting in compliance and keeping in compliance and just knowing, be proactive so no matter what happens, you're prepared.
Terrific. And, Jim, let me go ahead and just add, and Jill, appreciate all the good info you shared this evening. So how does the listener get in touch with you?
You know, anyone who has questions, I would be so happy if any of your listeners need to have some guidance, have some specific questions. They can get a hold of us, myself or any of our compliance consultants will answer at 941-587-2864. DentalEnhancements.com is the easiest way to look us up. And my direct email, please feel free to email me at Jill@DentalEnhancements.com. Certainly, you can contact us from our website as well. We'll field any questions. We're always happy to do a discovery meeting, see where you're at, see where you need to go, what's the easiest route to get in compliance and stay there.
And Jill, I think most of our listeners are from Dental Town. Is there anything special that you offer them?
We love Town.
To use your service.
You know, I just have such an endearing place in my heart for Dental Town. And I know, Han, you've been such a great asset to Dental Town. You do a lot of moderating. You actually taught me how to work my way and weave my way around when answering questions on some of the message boards. So we love townies, and townies always earn a 15% discount on any dental enhancements purchase. So please, townies, when you call, mention that. We want to really show our appreciation and support. So as a courtesy, we always offer a 15% off discount on any of our packages. Thanks for mentioning that, Han. I appreciate that.
And Jill, again, certainly appreciate your you know, making the time for us and sharing all of your knowledge with you know, our listener. I'm sure that most of them should have plenty of questions, and hopefully they they set your phone on fire, and hopefully you can take them, you know, get them into compliant and things like that. So again, really appreciate your time, Jill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen. I had a great time this evening. Thanks again, and I welcome any questions from any of your listeners. Thank you both.
All right.
Thank you.
Have a good night, Joe. Bye-bye.
Well, Han, that was a very enlightening and obviously a ton of information thrown at our listeners in just a short, you know, one-hour episode. So, again, to any one of our listeners, that if you'd like more information, please feel free to get a hold of Jill or, you know, us at our website. Again, www.hjtdesign.com. If we can't get an answer to your question directly from Han or myself, we'll get the right person to be able to do that. Our next show is, because we have the upcoming holidays, is scheduled for the 25th. Is that correct, Han? No, I'm sorry.
You can't.
There's no show on the 25th.
Christmas.
Yep. We don't want to take away from the Christmas activities. I know we're all going to be busy having too much to eat. At least I will be. So there'll be no show on the 25th. Also, we won't be doing a show on the 1st. So our next show will be 2019. Yep.
Right,
the 8th of January. We'll hopefully give everybody a heads up on what the topic will be for that evening. Any other thoughts, Han, before we sign out?
No, that's it. I think Jill shared a lot of stuff in a very short period of time. I learned a lot from that as well. Since we're going to be won't be broadcast until after the after the holidays, I'd just like to extend a Merry Christmas to everyone and all our listeners. Appreciate them plugging in with us.
Absolutely, and again, thank you so much for all those listeners literally all over the world. We really, really hope that it's been useful and we're providing useful information. And feel free at any time to get a hold of Hannah or ourselves, myself, and we'll do whatever we can do to answer your questions. With that, have a good rest of the year, and we will be back with you on the 8th of January. Good evening.
Until next time. Good night.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.